Welcome to episode 30 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, we talk about accessibility considerations in navigation menus, toolbars, and mega menus, and the things we're thinking about as we get ready to redesign the navigation experience on our own website. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/030. And now, on to the show.
Hey everybody, it's Amber, and today I am here with Chris.
Hey everyone.
And Steve.
Hello everyone.
And we are going to be talking about navigation menu accessibility. But before we do that, of course, we have to have a beverage. Chris, what's our beverage today?
So we are tasting Olipop Ginger Lemon. And for the unfamiliar, I think that their distribution is getting pretty far out there now as in terms of like where you can find this, but it is a soda that claims to support digestive health through prebiotics, botanicals, and plant fiber directly inside the drink. This is not the first bioactive soda we've tried on the podcast, but I am a fan of these kinds of drinks, particularly when they, in my opinion at least, I have yet to have a bad flavor from this, but I have not had the ginger lemon before. This whole can only contains 40 calories.
All right, so wait a minute. You're a fan of these kinds of drinks. You mean drinks that try to pretend they're healthy when they're really just a sugar bomb?
Well, no, it's 40 calories, not 400.
Is that a normal pop would be 400 calories?
No, I'm exaggerating. Oh. But no, like a normal can of pop, what do you think, Steve? Is it like 100?
Wait, do you have one on your desk, Steve?
Well, Steve drinks zero.
Well, no, I don't. Yeah, I drink diet.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so there's zero in there. Now, there may be other things in there causing problems, but... Yeah, I think it's pretty high. Like a regular Coke or some Dr. Pepper like that would, I think it's pretty high. There's a lot of sugar in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I read the can and I was like, they have their greenwashing down, man. They have a label that's very like clean. It's a simple kind of illustration style with a lemon and some sort of green plant. And they have all that prebiotics, botanicals, plant fiber on one side. And then on the other side, it says plant-powered microbiome approved. And they've drawn it like it's a seal. So to me, I was a little bit like, I think we tried another pop that had, it said it was probiotics, although I couldn't figure out right what the label was. I can't remember what pop that was. And I think the takeaway was, if you are going to drink pop, maybe it's better to drink a healthier one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just got to say, I mean, I tried to get it because I've had it before and it's amazing, but their Concord grape flavor is ridiculous. But we're trying ginger lemon today.
So is it going to taste like a ginger ale, you think?
I don't know. I mean, I would certainly consider maybe making like a Moscow Mule out of this. That'd probably be really good.
Well, prebiotic we're going to have ours virgin today.
Yes. Yes, we are. All right. So I think talked enough about this. Let's give it a try. Bottoms up here.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. So...
It's gingery.
It's very gingery.
Wait, I might not like the finish, though. Hold on. I got to try it again. I like the first flavor. Like, it has a spice kick on it. Oh, Steve, you're making a face. I wish everyone could see your faces sometimes when you try the drinks.
This is nasty.
Okay, so I will say, hold on, I'm going to take another sip. Chris, what do you think it tastes like?
I think I'm not getting a lot of the lemon, to be honest, or any, actually. I'm only tasting
either.
Ginger. But it is like a very spicy ginger ale. Maybe it's their formula, right? But I agree, like the finish is a little odd.
What was that like non-alcoholic margarita that we drank that kind of tasted like furniture polish? This reminds me of that.
Yeah.
Furniture. Yeah.
Like furniture the polish. Finish on the end is, I
chemically.
So
it's like a chemical.
So it doesn't feel chemical to me. It feels like it tastes kind of floral, but it has like it's not clean. Like some pops have like a bite and they leave like this almost leaves like an I don't know if it's oily, but like there's a mouthfeel after you're done drinking it, and I don't know if it's good. I don't know if I would recommend this pop to people.
My recommendation would be to chase it with a Diet Coke. Here we go. Chase it with a Diet Coke.
All right, that's two votes against.
You like it, Chris?
I don't mind it, but I really like ginger, like personally. My personal taste is I like spicy ginger ales, but I agree that the finish on this is definitely not its strong suit. Like there's something weird going on with the mouthfeel and the lingering flavor afterwards. Like I don't know what happens, but it's like you get a big hit of ginger and then that fades away very quickly, and then you're just kind of left with this strange botanically kind of earthy weird flavor.
It comes from there in their ingredients. It's labeled as Ollie Smart, and what Ollie Smart is Casanova root fiber, chicory root inulin, Jerusalem artichoke inulin, Nepal cactus, marshmallow root, calendula flower, and kudzu root. Some of them have their extracts. They have asterisks for extract. So I'm guessing that's the weird flavor. The ingredient and it's like water, then that are the two biggest ingredients. And then after that, they have ginger juice, lemon juice, apple juice concentrate, like more what you'd expect. And I'm kind of like, if they remove the Ollie Smart from it, all the ingredients after that sound good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did the grape one have that kind of flavor?
Honestly, not that I can remember. I've only had they have like a root beer flavor too that I've had. I've had root beer and grape, and now I've had this. This is definitely my least favorite of the three. The root beer flavor, meh. Like it's kind of reminiscent of root beer, but it wasn't amazing. But their grape flavor, like if you've ever had like Concord grapes or like a traditional grape soda, it was pretty close. Like it was nice tart Concord grape kind of flavor, and I feel like the grape flavor lingered, whereas this it's like ginger and then it quickly goes away.
Yeah, it's weird because when I first took a sip I was like, oh, I think I like it, because I got the ginger at the front. And remember we had the bhakti chai that was very gingery, and I like a spicy ginger, but then like the finish, it just, I mean, I might keep drinking it throughout the episode and sort of see how I feel, but I don't think I would ever buy it again, ever.
Yeah. I mean, good thing I've got like a whole case of it that Chris sent me.
Wait, your kids haven't been drinking it?
They probably tried one and were like, nope.
No, they like, when we did like the root beers and the Hello Kitty stuff, they went for that stuff, but no, they're not.
So when I went to get these out of the fridge today, these were the only two left. So I think our children have drank, granted we got these a little while ago, but yeah. It's not like they came in the mail yesterday, but so apparently they like it.
Yeah.
We also pretty much never keep any sort of commercial soda in the house. And so
not pretty much, like we never do.
Yeah. And so this was like exciting for them probably. They don't know any better. That's a horrible indictment. I'm sorry, Olipop, but it's like they drank it because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
But I stand behind their grape flavor. I think their grape flavor is amazing, and that's the one I wanted to get, and I couldn't get.
Yeah.
So maybe when Steve and I are over the trauma of furniture polish soda, we will be willing to try the grape one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say I did get to try the fruited sour that y'all got to taste with Matt on the last episode we recorded, and that was good. I enjoyed that one very much.
And it didn't.
Yeah, that was real good.
Taste weird when you were done drinking it.
Yep. And it made the rest of a working Friday very interesting.
It was fun, right? I don't know how the code looked on Monday morning.
No, it's like, why can't I focus? Oh, 9% alcohol. That's why I can't focus.
Yeah. Well, speaking this is non-alcoholic, but maybe not any better for an enjoyable Friday.
No. Well, speaking of focus and ability to focus, that's an important part of navigation menus, which we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, what a great segue, Chris. Yes, in your navigation menus, everything should be able to receive focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Even if you are a bit impaired on a Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly... You know, actually, this is sort of a funny sidebar, and maybe we can find this for the show notes. Did you all ever see the user is drunk?
No.
Oh, it sounds, I know what you're talking about.
This guy who was like a UX designer, I think, or something. And he got paid a lot of money by companies like HubSpot and some others as like, it was a marketing stunt for them. But he would drink and get drunk. And then he would go on their websites and like try to sign up for their services and do things and like record and release videos. and it was very hilarious, but it was also a little bit like, you never know what state a user might be in when they're on your website.
That's right.
So, I mean, I don't know how many drunk people are like, I'm going to go sign up for HubSpot right now.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what at the after party for the CMO convention.
I mean, let's be honest, with that pricing, you might need to be a little tipsy.
To not be afraid of what it's going to do to your marketing bottom line.
That's right.
All right. So, yeah, so let's talk about navigation menus. When this episode is going to air, you will have given a talk at WordCamp US on accessible navigation menus. So I'm guessing you're prepping a little bit for that, Steve. What thoughts do you have about important features of accessible navigation menus?
Well, I mean, I have lots of thoughts about it. And prepping for the talk, I should be prepping for it.
To be fair, it's a slight version of a talk you gave for WordPress Accessibility Meetup, right?
Right. Yeah, and just like with accessibility in general, right? Like, I'm improving the talk, right? I've gotten some feedback from the first round and, from some blind users as well on things that we could do better in conveying how to make accessible navigation menus. So, I don't know if you want me to get into the nitty-gritty details of it, but, I mean, I think at a high level, accessible navigation menus are convey the overall structure of the website adequately to the user and in an expected way, right? It's not crazy, like, the structure of it is semantic, right? It follows... uses like a list, and typically like a regular navigation menu would be an unordered list, right? And the submenus of that nest properly inside of that navigation menu. I mean, I understand that with CSS and JavaScript, we don't really have to write the HTML semantically, and we can still achieve what we're trying to achieve. But I think starting with a solid foundation of semantic list for your navigation menu that is nested properly is a good start. And then all those elements in that navigation menu should be accessible via a keyboard by hitting your tab key or even further, you could utilize arrow keys as well.
Yeah, in your navigation. I would like to call out for all of our listeners, if you have never gone on your website and used it without a mouse, the navigation menu. Do that. Like, yep. Either pause the podcast and go do it while you're listening, or make a mental note to do it later today. Like, do it and go and see if you can tab through and get to your dropdowns, because this is a problem that we see on a lot of websites we remediate. The dropdowns don't, there's no way to open them. Sometimes you can tab into them, but they don't surface visually, which I guess is a CSS problem, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. I've seen
that.
They
just stay hidden.
Yeah, yeah, it just depends how you're doing it, right? Like, if you're trying to make your navigation purely with CSS, it's difficult to get those submenus to stay open when they're tabbed to. So typically it requires a little bit of JavaScript to achieve that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I mean, bonus points too, if you listen to it on a screen reader and make sure that it's really clear.
Yeah. And I think, like, you can take, you know, if you have something that's semantic, right, like that the HTML looks good and it's readable to a screen reader, and you tap through and you can see all your sub-navigation menus, what you typically see is, like, you're tabbed to, like, your first nav item, and then when you tab, it'll open the drop-down and it'll start tabbing through the drop-down items, right? And then when it's at the end of that drop-down, it'll jump to the next parent navigation menu and repeat the same process. And I think what we found is going, like, an extra step and making the nav menu in a way where the parent items, when you tab to them, will tab straight through the parent items. And then we add a button next to parent items that have a drop down, and then that button gives them the opportunity to toggle on the drop down and what that allows a screen reader user to do, or a keyboard user to do, is to just quickly tap to the parent items and only open the submenu if they want to get that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can imagine that experience versus having to tab through everything to get to something that's three or four, you know, items along across an upper navigation menu. It's the difference between 25 or 30 interactions, depending on how populated your dropdowns are, and 3 to 4 interactions.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and actually that's something that I know earlier this year you enhanced on ours. So our website, which we're in the process of planning to rebuild as a custom theme, but it's older. It's probably one of the last Genesis websites we ever built. And the Genesis mm-hmm. nav menu is technically accessible, but it didn't have that feature that you just described, which is allowing people to bypass dropdowns. And when you have a lot of items in your dropdown menu, it can get really annoying to have to tab through all of those sub items when you really want to get to something that's, you know, in top menu position 3.
Right.
And so I know you enhanced that on ours, and that was your talk at WordPress Accessibility Meetup. So if anybody wants to find that recording, we can link it in the show notes. But it's come up quite a bit. Like, we're remediating a website for a community college that's under mandated remediation with the Office of Civil Rights as part of the Department of Education in the United States. And they're looking for that. Even though it's not a WCAG thing, they're like, it has to have these separate buttons to open dropdowns, and you should not force someone to have to tab through all of your dropdowns. So even though it's not, it's like a quote above and beyond on WCAG, it's really the best practice from a usability standpoint.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen. Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant. real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, and two, like, just think about yourself as a sighted user, right? Like, we have the ability to just visually glance at a navigation menu and find what we're looking for, right? How frustrating would it be if I could only see the one link that I'm currently looking at, and then I have to look at all the other ones? You know what I mean? Like, if the only one I focused on with my eyes was the only one I could see,
right?
If you think about it in that respect, and then if I had to like look through, like, say you have 10 sub navigation items, and then there's even flyouts from those, right? Like, so you've got all these ancestor links that I have to run through just to find the about page, right? Mm-hmm. It's definitely like increases usability for keyboard users so much.
Well, and I think this is a trend that's leaving the space, thankfully, but I remember in the mid to late 2010s going to websites of bigger, flashier marketing agencies or design oriented marketing agencies that were trying to win, you know, Webby Awards or whatever, and their navigations would not at all even remotely resemble a navigation menu. It would be like a bunch of objects floating in space around their logo, like, and it was like a picture with barely visible words to denote, you know, looking at their portfolio or something else. I don't know if y'all are visualizing what I'm trying to put out there, but it's these really weird, wonky, non-navigation navigations. And so the other thing I wanted to bring up here is, like, your navigation menu for all users, not just keyboard or screen reader users, should behave in a way that is at least somewhat typical of a navigation menu. It shouldn't be this weird, outlandish, never before seen thing that adds a bunch of cognitive load and confusion because people don't intuitively understand how to use it.
Right. Yeah. And I'll go back to kind of what I first touched on too, was like the importance of structuring your site in a way that makes sense. Right. And because you could go into WordPress and just, create a whole bunch of pages, and then you can create a menu nested in any format that you like, right? And it'll still output semantically based on the way you structured the nav menu inside the WordPress admin. But conveying the structure of your website through your navigation, I think, is extremely important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like nesting your pages properly.
Yeah. And consistently across the site, because I've been on some sites where the nav changes, and that can really throw people off.
From like page to page.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this has come up on something that we're auditing right now, where they have like contextualized sub navigation for like subsections of the site that it's a bar that shows up on some pages and not on others. And it's like, you know, what is the expectation for that consistency, that it doesn't throw users off and they understand as they're moving between different pages and sections, you know, where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, the other thing that is interesting, and I'm sure we're going to start talking about mega menus at some point here, but how do you feel about... This was a trend for a while. I don't feel like I see it as much on bigger websites anymore, though I do still see it on small websites. Like putting pictures in nav menus or videos or maps or like other non-links, things that aren't links. What do you guys think? Good? Bad?
Bad.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
I think it's it's unnecessary, right? Like you're clearly trying to shove something in front of the user's intent, right? Like yeah. That's the way I kind of look at this from a user perspective, right? Because if someone is engaging with your navigation menu, and I think this is most common in a mega menu where you're like shoving things in there that don't necessarily belong, is someone's clearly trying to navigate your website and find something, and you're like you're basically distracting or disrupting them by sticking a video in there, or something that really really should not be there. Yeah. It's not the intent of the element, right? There's like a nav tag, right? I'm not a coder, but like you're putting a video inside of something, inside of a navigation tag. Like from a standpoint of semantic HTML, that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, probably most of those WordPress mega menus don't even use nav tags. Like the ones like the random plugins that are out there, I think it's entirely possible that a lot of them aren't even doing that, right? Yeah. But yeah, like that's a weird thing. Like there's plugins for WordPress that allow you to use any widget that exists on your website in the navigation menu, you know, or like contact forms inside a navigation menu. I've seen before. Yeah. I mean, I think we did it once. I remember a long time ago we had for like a OBGYN, they wanted like a video. And it was like under their about. And it was like, here's the about navigation and here's the video.
Yeah.
We will not do that again, though.
Yeah. I mean, we've touched a lot on, keyboard usability and stuff. But there's a considerable amount of visual considerations to think about when you're making a navigation menu, because navigations are very visual. They have to convey a lot of visual information to the user as well, like what link am I hovering over, right? What link is active, right? What link am I focused on? So there's a lot of, and then to like, it can be tricky sometimes based on the design you have to come up with styles that convey all of those things, because if you say you have a a parent nav item that is active, right? So like the hover state and the focus state of that nav item is probably different than the rest, right? The ones that are not active. So making that consideration, I think, is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are also, I'm just, just kind of stating the obvious here, but there are also lots of different kinds of navigation menus that can come up on websites. And I don't mean just like standard menus versus mega menus, but also there's like toolbars, right? And footer menus and
breadcrumbs is navigation.
And so I'm wondering, like, and this is me just not having as deep of a knowledge of this stuff as like a auditor would, where should like a secondary toolbar menu fall in the tab order? Like if someone's tabbing through a website, they just hit the page, there's a toolbar and there's a primary nav, like where or how do they get to that toolbar menu and interact with it?
Well, I mean, in an ideal world, the tab order matches the visual order on the page.
Yeah.
Now I've seen on WordPress themes where it doesn't. I actually, one of my admin bar posts is about focus order and reading order. And it's only technically a WCAG violation if the focus order doesn't match the visual order, if it impacts the user's ability to understand the page. So if visually you have the social media icons first and then you have the primary navigation, but in focus order you go to the primary navigation and then the social media icons, like that probably from a usability perspective for a screen reader user, even a keyboard only user, like it's not really going to impact their ability to navigate or understand the website. It's just kind of annoying for someone who can see. Yeah. But it's not like, I don't know if it's a clear problem. Well, like, always
Sometimes like secondary menus are actually above the primary menu. Like, should, like, if say you have like a, you have a top menu, right, which has like my account, shopping cart, you know, like a checkout.
Yeah, and that's and exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, and then you have your main navigation menu that has like all the typical links in it. What would one expect the order of those menus semantically to actually be the primary menu first and then the secondary menu that is actually visually on top?
I mean, I think a sighted person expects it to go in the order that they see them, and it would be confusing. Like if they hit tab and it skipped that top menu and went to primary, they might think that stuff in the in that top menu wasn't keyboard accessible, right? I think the expectation is that it follows the visual order on the page. Now, one thing you can do, the Genesis does, which is pretty nice, is they actually add a skip link that jumps. They don't just have a skip to content. They have skip to content, skip to primary nav, and skip to footer, both of which function with keyboards and screen readers and will jump people. So I think if you have a lot of stuff, like I've seen websites where there's like three or four different grouped navs in the header, having one, a skip link that allows someone to quickly get to the primary navigation menu might be very helpful in that case.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's interesting about skip links. They don't have to only just skip your header completely. Like you can add a hidden, I know there was one time on a search results page, or like with filtering, when the page loaded, because it reloaded on filter, you added Steve like a jump link to go to results just on that page, so that they could quickly, because when it reloads, the screen reader user is going to get dumped at the top of the page.
Yeah, I think we are modifying the page title as well, so it would read out the count of the
how many results
of the query. Yeah. So I think with the secondary navigation menu too, like some, like I think and correct me if I'm wrong, Amber, for keyboard users or blind users, having a secondary navigate, say you have one like in like a left sidebar, right? You have a secondary navigation menu, and I think if you do that, I think consistency is really important, right? That from page to page, that the secondary navigation menu is in a consistent place. Isn't that like, so like if your secondary navigation menu is in the sidebar and it's basically the same links that are like in your dropdown, right? That's actually a good practice, right? That's helpful.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the ways that you can achieve. There's a WCAG guideline called multiple ways, which is you need to provide people multiple ways of navigating a website. And so that could be one way, right? So you have your primary navigation, and then when you're in a subsection, you have a sidebar that lists all of those same pages there. Or maybe that's why you see in footers that they'll list out pretty much everything that's in the primary navigation, only it's no longer in a dropdown, right? I think like providing interior page navigation is really helpful. Now it needs to be coded as a nav tag and it needs to be labeled. So that's one thing with nav tags we see, like sometimes there'll be navigation menus and they're in a nav tag, which is good, but there's no ARIA label on it. And so there's no way for a user to know which nav is which. Like, is this the primary? Is this a interior page navigation? Is this a breadcrumbs navigation? Like, no idea. They're all just navigation.
Right.
So, and also when you use those names can be used with the screen reader to jump to them. So if they hear that your navigation is main, right? Like they could jump to main navigation from anywhere on the page.
Right. And the typical use case for that, aside from like secondary navigation menus, is your footer nav, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at ours, our main navigation. I wonder if our footer navigations have
I mean, I don't know, because the footer on our current site is built with like widgets and.
Yeah, yeah, they are widgets.
But they're are so they menus, menu widgets? I don't even have it open, so I don't know.
What do you mean menu? Yeah, like, it's a menu.
It's built with a menu. It's not. So like, I think that's okay. I mean, generally, if you're using WordPress and you're using a WordPress menu block to add in a list of pages or posts, it's going to give it the appropriate tags. Where people get in trouble is they're like, I'm just going to use a list block because it needs to be a list, and they add that, and then it doesn't end up, it's not wrapped in a nav tag, it's just a UL for an unordered list. But
well, the menu widget is not wrapped in a nav tag, but I mean, yeah, it's a UL, and we've got adequate titles above, you know, there's a there's a title above it. So it's almost more like it's not considered a navigation menu. It's more of just like linked content in a list, right?
Yeah, with headings above.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is an interesting conversation because I know we've tried to avoid mega menus, but as Chris and I are talking about, like, what is the best user experience on our website as our website grows, like, we're creating a lot of content now that it's not super easy to find all of it necessarily with our events that are coming up and or past events. We have a ton of documentation. We have our plugin, plus we have our services, right? So now I'm in the land where I'm starting to think that we should have mega menus. Instead of just single dropdowns, because the dropdowns get so long. And I think it would be nice to have like two or three columns of content under each item and have a button that you can click it and it would open that sub item. And then you'd have multiple columns in that. What's the wait, general
we were going to debate that here, right?
Yeah. This is a debate. Are you anti us putting a mega menu on our own website?
Who you asking?
Yes, Steve, go first.
Steve. Yeah.
I have a knee jerk reaction to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my right. That's my initial. No, and you know, I'll selfishly admit that's probably for two reasons. One, that accessibility is a problem. Two,
you don't want to code it.
Just always. They're always a nightmare to code.
No, I really want to dig into that more, right? Like the no knee-jerk reaction and the fact that it's harder to build. I want to dig into that more and kind of understand as a non-technical person, like what makes it significantly more difficult.
I mean, well, for one,
it needs more JavaScript, right?
Well, for one, like accessible nav menu I've got figured out, right? Like it already exists. It's already kind of done. It's been done on a lot of websites, and so typically, like, mega menus, when you go into a project, it's custom to that theme, right? You're having to code custom stuff that you don't normally have to on every project.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the ways that we've experimented with this in the past, because I think it's sort of interesting, and I don't know if there's one we would choose. But so there are three ways that I think we've built we've built mega menus in the past that are mostly accessible. I don't know if they're all perfect. So we tried for a while using Max Mega Menu because I tested a bunch. That was the one that was the closest. It doesn't have arrow support. I don't think it indicates active page. So like, it needs a little bit of help to fix it. But as far as Mega Menu plugins, that's the best. The actual UI for building it can be a little bit confusing. Like, I don't think clients always know how to go in and edit stuff. And then also it has the downside of it supports adding anything.
Widgets.
Yeah, clients then can go in and be like, oh, I'm going to add weird random stuff to my navigation menu, which I don't like. So we've tried that. We've also done the approach of you just take the admin menu and whatever is in sub items becomes the mega menu. And if you have like three sub items with five things under it, then you end up with a menu with three columns. But that also is not super intuitive. And then, like, we're remediating a website that's built that way. And so then they had, like, they only wanted the top ones not to be links. So they just put hashtags in. So we ended up having to, like, I think one of our devs, Balginder, coded something that added a checkbox to the menu item. So if you checked it off, it would actually turn it into a heading, because that's what it is. It's a heading. It's not a link. It shouldn't be a hashtag link just because they want a fake heading, right? So there's that approach. And then there's another project we did recently where we use ACF to build like a custom mega menu builder where you built the sub menus in the WordPress admin, but then you laid them out in the columns in the custom ACF thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'll add a fourth into that I think we may have abandoned, but we definitely started. I found a way to hook in an ACF field into the nav menus, like WordPress nav menus. I hooked a repeatable ACF field into that, so you could actually build the modules inside of your mega menu, like the sections in your mega menu inside of the link. I think we may have abandoned it just out of complexity and time restraints. I think we went with the max mega menu on that one. But yeah, that was definitely an approach. And I think it would have been slick if I would have had time to flesh it out, but
yeah. So I mean, I do think that's the thing, like going in this is like, okay, now we have to, as much as possible, we try to convince clients not to do mega menus. Sometimes it happens, and it, like, I have design files right now, which I don't think you've seen yet, Steve, for a website, and it's got a mega menu. Right?
Hide them as long as possible.
But I think from a usability standpoint, we're going to need it on our website. I think our website is growing enough that, and we want people to be able to access the information clearly, and I think it is a better user experience in this case to have a mega menu.
Well, we haven't touched on why mega menus are bad. Why they're a challenge to make accessible.
Okay, so why?
Okay, so we'll put it back on me.
You're the developer. I just say make it accessible, and then it magically is accessible. So I don't think it's hard.
That's how that works, right?
I know. Yeah. Amber's just like, do this thing, and it just happens. It's like,
just make it easy enough. We just tell the dev team to make it accessible, and it just happens. Oh, man. Yeah, so, I mean, they're challenging just because there's so much going on. There could be so many things, right? Like, on the front end, it's a challenge. You have to code a custom thing that stays open. Does it fit within the content of the site, or is it full width? Does it push the site down? Does it overlay the site? You know, there's just a lot of considerations there. Then, like Amber and I were just talking about, you have to find a way to store that data, right, somewhere in WordPress. How are you going to do that? How are you going to do that in a way that's easy for you to output it on the front end? How are you going to do that in a way that is intuitive for a content creator to modify, right, without having to jump through a lot of hoops and make, like you said, make links headings, because that's the only way you could think to do it, right? That probably is the biggest challenge in a mega menu, is providing something intuitive to the client to update. From a content standpoint, right, you have to ensure that you go through your parent items, you hit that top one that you're calling out to a screen reader, that there's a drop down, or would it be considered a modal, right? Like, or has pop up, you know, something like that, that you're conveying that link has a drop down, right? Once you get inside of that, what's in there, right? Is there a header in there? Are there buttons in there? Are there other menus in there? Are there videos in there? Like, right?
We will not put a video in our navigation.
You got to consider too. Like, if you have a video in there, is there a transcript for the video? Like, where do you put that transcript? It's probably going to have to be linked off somewhere else, right? Because you're not going to want to put a big old long transcript inside of a mega menu for a video. You're probably linked to it, right? Or have the content somewhere else on the page, right? And have, like, described by or something like that, where So there's just so many caveats. You got to make sure your tab order follows, that it reads out, you know, right to the screen reader. There's just a lot of things to think of. And because you're essentially building a page. It's a web page inside of a pop-up. So,
Yeah, and I will say too, and you know, this is something that I think we could probably include in the show notes, but the real estate firm that we built their website, their mega menu, I feel like from a keyboard navigation perspective is quite good. Like I tab through the upper level menus. If I want to activate one of the pop-ups, I hit my space bar, or not really a pop-up, but you know, activate one of the mega menu drop-downs, and then my tab order, the focus shifts, my tab order goes through everything on that mega menu in a logical sequence, and I can go, and then it takes me back up to the upper navigation menu again if I want. It's a nice clean experience, and was probably very hard to build.
I think this one,
well, I mean that uses the Max Mega Menu plugin.
I mean, there's things about this one that I don't like. I mean, we can link to it in show notes since you mentioned it. And like, let's talk about it. We had separate buttons for the dropdowns next to the top level items, because she has the top level items linking to pages.
Mm-hmm.
And they made us remove them.
Well, not just that.
Too. Not talking bad about our client on a call, but hopefully, or on a podcast episode. Hopefully she doesn't listen to our podcast. Yeah. But like, they made us remove them. And I was like, no, we need this. And they argued, and we finally were like, okay, but you have to acknowledge that this is not an accessibility best practice. And they were like, okay, fine. Right? And sometimes that happens with clients. But.
Well, weren't there links that didn't have... So what, like links that didn't is maybe
it's been a while since we built this, so I don't remember, but there were a couple of things that came up on this navigation menu that like in testing, because as part of our testing, we always do screen reader and keyboard testing, got flagged. You fixed them and then they made it go back.
Yeah.
The clients were like, why'd you do that? No. Yeah.
That we could have a podcast episode on, you know, buy into accessibility, you know, like just on dealing with
Amber, write that down.
Okay.
Yeah. Just dealing with clients buy in on accessibility, and even our suggestions, like when we audit and then, you know, those things aren't remediated. Right. Like there's a lot that goes into that. And, I know we've talked about it before too, like in Chris's,
see, now you're just making me want to talk about it. Can we just
Chris is, go another Chris hour? Is giving some, he's giving some good information about when clients choose not to take the most accessible route, right? We've even got ways to like have sign-offs that we're choosing not to be accessible. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to, I mean, like the client wants what the client wants, right? Sometimes we have to do what they want. I'm pulling up the website now and kind of inspecting
the menu. I don't think so this is a weird thing, right? Because we had buttons but they had us remove them, but because she has the top level items going somewhere, it's a link, it's not a button, but it still has Aria has pop-up and Aria expanded on it, which is a little weird on a link. But because she wanted them to go somewhere instead of just being a button to open the menu. But actually, that's an interesting, So I don't know,
Yeah, I'm looking at the code. I actually coded in some JavaScript to, since it's Max Mega Menu, right? This is not a menu that we made or like a custom nav walker that we made. I actually had to write some JavaScript to flip that element from a link to a button. And I can see that we actually added that and then removed it.
Yeah. Although it's weird though, because I can't actually, I guess with, wait a minute, hold on, let me go back. So on this one, so with a keyboard, it functions like a button. It just opens the dropdown. You can't follow the link that's there. But with a mouse, you can follow the link. So that it's like weird, right?
But I think the saving grace here is that so you tab to the first parent item, right? And then you can hit your space bar or your return key to get the mega menu to open. And then there's a heading of the same thing. It says current development, and then they have a view current developments button.
Which
that's kind of the saving grace of not being able to.
Well, let's say it's a link style that's a button. It's not a button.
Correct. Sorry.
But yes, so because they did that, there's like the same link that a mouse user can get on the top item that a keyboard user can't get is also in the mega menu. So it's not like they can't get there. But yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Mega menus and all that functionality, there's a lot, I think, that has to be thought about with it.
And I don't know. I don't want to go super deep on this, but like mega menus, when you get to mobile, you have to make some decisions about what's really going to stay on mobile.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Well, if it's just links and headings, though, your headings on mobile have to become buttons probably that then expand the sub items under them, right?
Right. I mean, I'm saying even the content, you need to consider like what content should stay. Like, do you really need that heading? Do you need that video on mobile?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at her mega menu trying to figure out what all is in here.
I think most things stay, don't they?
Yeah, because they have some bigger headings and some subtext on the left side. Like, it looks like an H2 maybe. Oh no! No one go inspect this website. It's an H4.
What's an H4?
I just inspected the under the about us. In that mega menu, there's a heading that's an H4.
I wonder if they went and changed that.
But it would have changed the styles, wouldn't it? I don't know.
So this is that's output by the mega menu block, right?
Oh, it's not something. That's weird.
Well, so it's.
Wouldn't Wave have detected that? I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean, we would have too in testing, but I don't know. We built this website a while ago. Who knows? Like, I mean, we've talked about it at the beginning, like even Steve said, right, with his talk, he previously gave an accessible navigation menu talk. He's going to give it again at WordCamp US, or he will have given it again at WordCamp US when people are listening to this. But he's making updates to it since giving the first talk. Like, it's a journey. Accessibility is a journey. And do we find, we do accessibility. That's all we do. But we still find problems on websites that we built, you know, and launched.
Because we're better today than we were a year and a half or 2 years ago when we built this. Yeah.
That's right.
So. And that's the way it should be for everyone, right? Like, I don't think you can demand perfection of yourself. You just have to demand, like, willingness to learn and grow.
Yeah. And I think that underscores the importance of ongoing accessibility audits, whether it's through a plugin like Accessibility Checker, or it's hiring an agency to do ongoing audits, either periodically or, you know, like monthly. Because if you have a website that's living and breathing, content's being created by humans, which humans fail at following things, you know, it's like, the task is to write an article, right? And sometimes you accidentally skip a heading level, right? That's why it's always important to have some kind of plan, accessibility plan within your company to have some kind of, at the very least, automated audit of your website.
And if you can designate, I was just going to say, if you can designate an internal advocate, even if they, like, if there's someone on your team who cares about accessibility for whatever reason, even if they aren't, you know, the WAS certified and whatever else with 20 years of experience, like, have an in-house advocate. And just by having an advocate, even if they don't know everything, they will, if you listen to them, they will hopefully make your stuff more accessible. And yeah, have the testing tools. Have a person in-house who is kind of championing these things if you're a small team. And find a partner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we sort of left navigation menus, so that tells me we should probably wrap on our podcast episode. We'll definitely have to throw some of these links in the show notes. There's another one that I'll put up there for people who are interested in mega menus. Adobe has on their GitHub an example of an accessible mega menu, which is kind of cool if you're thinking about building your own. I mean, I think where I landed, TBD, I guess, because who knows, you know, if we get this new website built, if it'll have a mega menu or not, I'm voting for it. But I do think that if it were to be one, it will all be a custom tool. Like, I don't think we would use something that exists in a WordPress plugin. So maybe we could have a follow-up episode if we do that and talk about how we actually ended up coding our mega menu. And that's my hint, subliminal messaging to Steve, that we're going to have one.
Maybe we think about the community as a whole when we make that and see if we can produce some kind of code or plugin or some kind of documentation alongside that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks, guys. It was fun talking nav menus and accessibility with you. I'm not so sure about Olipop Ginger Lemon.
No.
It's still pretty full. Yep. I have not drank it all in this hour.
I don't know if Olipop Ginger Lemon will be on the menu again.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right.
Bye.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.